Joey boy, don't be tempting fate with me here. I was bricking.
The referee was absolutely shocking.
Subscribe now to the OTB Rugby Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts, or get the entire OTB catalogue on the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, our next guest is very quietly carving out a very impressive coaching career. Played for Munster between 01 and 06, and again for the 09 season as well. On retirement, he became director of rugby at Young Munster. And then big break from a coaching perspective came at Grenoble, where he went in initially as the skills coach. That was between 2013 and 2017. He was then backs coach at Oyonnax from 2017 to 18, then backs coach at Stade Francais 18 to 19, and then as of 2019, he's been the backs coach with Racing 92. Great to welcome Mike Prendergast to the show. Mike, how you doing?
Good, Joe. Thanks a million for having me on.
No, great to have you on. There's obviously an all-French European final with a Munster twist as well at the weekend, so we might pick your brain on that, I'm sure. How often is he on to you now? A few times a week, stealing your ideas?
It's not like that. It's the other way around. No, we speak quite regularly. I was on to him this morning, and he's in good spirits and looking forward to a big game on Saturday.
Well, listen, you're carving out a really, you know, varied, interesting career, and it seems to be going well. Just to get a few words on you as a player first, Mike. I know it probably feels like ancient history. I don't know how often you think about the old days that much. So you were at Munster in the senior squad for those 5 years. There was that pesky Peter Stringer fella ahead of you for a lot of it. So how was the playing career? I know a couple of injuries thrown in as well. How did it go for you on the whole? How do you look back on it?
Yeah, with fond memories. I think it was great times. I suppose that journey was starting out with Declan Kidney as head coach at the time, and everything was new, and it just really snowballed. But great memories when I look back. Obviously, you'd wish to have played more, but to be fair to Peter, he was in there, and he was a fantastic scrum half who played nearly 100 times for Ireland as well. So in between my career, I decided to make a change as well, and I moved abroad. I went to France, to Bourg-1 for a season. Yeah. And I played a year in Gloucester, and then went back to Munster for my final year, which was a nice thing to do as well. But just all really good, fun memories, and obviously still in contact with a lot of the ex-Munster players, and you know, it was great days.
So you didn't find it demoralising, frustrating to be maybe in the 23 but not getting the game time that you wanted?
Being honest, I did. I was as competitive as anyone. I just, you know, you want to play as much rugby as you can, because you train equally as hard as anyone else. But look, that's just the way the ball broke. And as I said, I had a very good scrum half ahead of me in Peter. But as I said, only fond memories when I look back and think of it, you know.
Yeah. I was reading that you had a couple of injuries early on, a cruciate and I think a shoulder injury as well. Mm-hmm. And there was maybe a threat to the career, or certainly a chance this thing could wind up early. Clearly, you realised you wanted to stay in the game. So you're one of these players who got their head around the idea of coaching pretty early, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Joe. I actually, when I was 23, I think it was, I did my shoulder. I got a reconstruction, so I was out for 6 months. And unfortunately, my first game back, I did my cruciate. So overall, it spanned over a year. So I wasn't sure would Munster keep me on. So with the second injury, I just decided that, you know, as you said, I wanted to stay in the game and would I have been able to continue. And fortunately enough, Munster kept on to me through those injuries. But in the meantime, I started a bit of coaching locally with clubs, and I just got the taste of it, and I knew where I wanted to go. And then as a player, having that opportunity to play in France in the top 14 and in the Premiership as well was something appealing for me as a player, but also I wanted to experience something different, because I suppose I had one eye potentially in the future if something came up. Unfortunately, it did, and I think it's you know, those two years away, I think stood to me as well in my coaching career afterwards. You know,
how so?
Just I suppose getting the experience to play in France, see what it was like. I actually did a year here, and I'd signed for 2 years, but there was an option to go to Gloucester, and it was probably easier for me, especially my partner at the time, because we came to Bourg-1. It was a small little town, There wasn't a huge amount going on, I suppose, from my partner's point of view, because, you know, for us it's easier. We've been in meeting 40, 50 players every day, but for my partner it's probably a bit different. And we kind of made a decision just before Christmas to take up the Gloucester offer. And you know what? When I left, it was only kind of a year after, I look back and I always regretted leaving France. So just to see what was over here and the opportunities it could create. And then fortunately, through Bernard Jackman, I got back into France through Grenoble.
And Mike, in those playing years when you're thinking about coaching in the afterlife, rugby is such a technical sport, such a coach-led sport. Are you like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at home every night after training, taking down what was done in training and trying to almost document how a team was run? I mean, did you throw yourself into it in that kind of a way, or was it more just observant and keeping an eye on things almost?
I think it was a bit of both, really. I think when I had the injuries, as I said, I thought of my career would finish up playing, so I needed to keep in the game and to coach. And I just think, I suppose I would have been a student of the game growing up even. And I was fortunate enough to have some very good coaches pass through Munster as well. And I would have been maybe a bit of a rugby geek growing up and taking those notes and, you know, thinking about the future. And then a bit of it as well when I went abroad. I did my coaching badges obviously in Ireland, but I did them in England also as well. So as I said, there was always probably that want that I wanted to, or that desire that I wanted to go coaching, but it probably went off my head earlier than expected because of the injuries, you know.
How much has the game changed? How much of the things that were being said in the dressing room from a structural point of view or a tactical point of view across those 5 years at Munster are useful to you now in 2021? Is it totally different?
There is a lot different in terms of the technical and the tactical aspect. The game has moved on. It's a game that changes quite quickly, actually. But the values are still there, you know, and I think a big thing for me as well as a coach is the managing side of it. And I was fortunate enough to be coached by someone like Declan Kidney, who had really, really good management skills, player management skills, you know. And that's something, I suppose, it was an experience, a good experience to go through. And it's something that I've taken into my coaching pathway. And it's a big part of what I try to do as a coach as well, is just building relationships with players, you know.
I find it is amazing the pace at which the game changes, maybe more so than lots of sports. Like, you take even Ireland, top of the world in 2018, and by the World Cup the following year, the game plan's been worked out. You know, that's it's redundant almost, is how quickly it changed. So if you were to kind of, in a very blunt way, admittedly, but I'm sure the rugby geeks would be curious to know, what are the big changes, say, over the last 10, 12 years? Or what have been maybe the different points of emphasis or kind of phases in the sport? Like, I feel like ruck was a big thing and Joe Schmidt made the ruck really important. And there's less of a focus on that now, perhaps. I don't know. Well, you can't not have much focus on the ruck at any era, I suppose. But are there different kind of phases the game has gone through maybe in the last decade that you could almost, again, in a blunt way, almost summarise?
Yeah, I think, look, the speed of ball, going back even 7 or 8 years ago to try and get a ball under 3 seconds, there wasn't too much chat around that. Now it's a massive part of it. And I suppose, especially in Ireland, you know, with Joe Schmidt, who was, you know, tactically or technically very, very astute around that ruck area. I just think, look, the game has moved on, but in saying that, you don't want to confuse things. So, and I suppose working in France is something that maybe has highlighted that for me, that it's really important to get your message across very clear, very simple, very precise, and very direct. But the thing is, you obviously want to add in your bits of ingredients and you want to add in your bit of detail around it. But, you know, first and foremost, and I think it's something that working in France has probably highlighted that because of the language barrier. So I'm trying to get my message across, obviously, in French. I want to make sure that they're understanding it. So I'm trying to make it as simple as I can. And then, as you said, kind of that's early week. You put in your big rocks, we'll call them, for the weekend. And then you add in your ingredients and your smaller detail during the week. But how the game has evolved, it's just evolved in so many ways. You know, trying to break down defences now, I suppose, going back a number of years ago. Yeah. Okay, there was a rush defence there. now you're getting an organised rush defence. You know, you look at La Rochelle, what I suppose Raj has brought him in from a defensive point of view, having played against them a few times. They're a hard team to, very hard team to break down. And that, I think, is especially for an attack coach, I think the challenges are there. It's about trying to find space. There'll always be space in the pitch, but I think it's about how you find it, you know, and the best ways of doing it.
Yeah, the rush defence, the organised rush defence has definitely been a huge thing the last couple of years. But and then the days of having three in the backfield seem to be gone as well. You know, it's generally two at any one time. And then, look, we'd have Ronan on the show plenty of times as well, and he would use that phrase you have just used, which is there's got to be space somewhere. So suddenly if it's only one or two in the backfield and there's a defence of 14 rushing up against you, then you got to start kicking more. So I guess that's how all these things evolve.
Yeah, absolutely. Offensive kicking is a massive part of the game now, and it can be a massive, I suppose, attacking tool. And it's something here where we in Racing, we're fortunate enough to have a guy like Finn Russell, that his short kicking game is very effective, and he can do it so late. And I think it's got to do as well what way you're set up. You know, it's all well and good saying you're going to kick the space, but you want to kick to win that ball back. And I think, you know, there's a lot of teams that play, most teams play different systems. You've teams that lead flankers on the edges, so wingers will go infield, so they can go in around the 15s and work around their 10 as options. But then you have your two back rows pulling the edges, so staying in the 5 metre channels, that you'll always have that kicking option if your winger does go. You know, if your winger stays, the back row's pushed in. So there's all these little intricacies that make it interesting. And there's, as I said, there is always ways to find space. But you're right, in terms of the backfield, you know, teams now are defending with two in the backfield, 13 in the front line. And that becomes obviously a bigger challenge. But I think then when you're talking about that as well, you know, I know Ronan alluded to about obviously the offloading game and also your ruck as well. If you know, you've got to be able to go through probably multi phases to hold on to that ball if you're coming up against 13 defenders in the front line. So your ruck needs to be very, very accurate.
And one last one, because I do want to talk to you primarily about your career. In terms of like the great innovations in the game, the received wisdom would be that the New Zealanders, the Kiwis, are ahead of the rest when it comes to innovative thinking. Do you agree with that, and is that still the case?
I'm not sure. I think from a skill point of view, yeah. I think their skill levels are incredible, you know. And again, working with different players and just the different philosophies over here. I've alluded to before, and even in our club here in Racing, we've 10 different nationalities. So you're always, you know, I'd be quite an open-minded coach. So I like little discussions with players and seeing their side of what way they look at the game, or, you know, if it's a 3v2 or whatever it may be. But I think one interesting thing, if you look at the Kiwis, I suppose over the last number of years or previous years, we would have been talking about keeping depth. You know, the Kiwis are all about staying quite flat, but they have the ability just to catch that ball early and you know, rip it across or just that little tip on pass or whatever it may be. So yes, I think from an innovative point of view, I think, for example, Ireland or France or a lot of nations are up there, but I think their skill set under pressure, under fatigue, is something that maybe they're still ahead of.
Right. And actually, one last one, then I do want to get back to your career, but it's so interesting, all these answers. You went in as skills coach initially at Grenoble. Where are we, Ireland, when it comes to skill? It's been talked about quite a bit here, obviously, over the last year, 18 months, particularly as things went awry, I suppose, post-2018. Where is the skill set? Where are we focusing enough on that at underage level? What's your sense?
I suppose, look, I'm out of the loop for nearly eight years, but looking from afar, you look at, I suppose, Leinster in terms of their skill set, their skillful team, their skill set are quite high. I think Ireland have probably, you know, change your game on how they want to attack, and it takes time. You know, when you're implementing an attack system, that takes a bit of time. But a system is one thing. So you have your as I call it your framework, and you want players to express themselves within that framework, and that usually comes down to how skillful you are and how good a decision maker. So they kind of go hand in hand for me, and I think, look, yeah, it's probably something that needs always to be worked on in terms of your skill level. But there are the players definitely at home in the provinces. You look at even someone like Connacht, you know, they play a nice brand of rugby that challenge their skills often in tough weather conditions as well. So it's obviously an area that they have focused on. And I know going back to the Pat Lam area, that was something that he was massive on. And it just shows, I think, how much that benefited them, you know.
Well, the really interesting thing about the Lam era was that he turned it around with adults, you know, because when we have these conversations, we start saying, well, we have to get it implemented at grassroots and it has to be from underage all the way up. And it was, you know, the received wisdom might be that a 25-year-old isn't really going to massively improve the skill set. And yet Pat Lam made them all take a ball home with them and have a ball at all times. And, you know, a year later, you start to see the benefits. That was what was so interesting about Lam. But back to you. So if you've just tuned in, we're talking to Mike Prendergast, who's obviously backs coach now at Racing. Munster for those few years, the playing career, and a little bit in France and a little bit at Gloucester, and then you retire. And I know you went in as director of rugby at Young Munster, or Young Munsters as you call them. This was a big talking point in our news round. Don't worry about it. We'll come back to it another time. The big name players, Ronan O'Gara, Paul O'Connell, they have, you know, their names right across the rugby world. For you as a lesser name, trying to forge a career, trying to get a break at professional level, how difficult is that as a Mike Prendergast as opposed to an O'Connell or an O'Gara or an O'Driscoll, if you wanted to go into it, or any of these guys? How hard do you have to beat down a door to get a chance, Mike?
Well, that's exactly, I suppose, Joe, what I did have to do. I remember doing up when I was at Young Munsters. First of all, that I massively appreciate the role and the creative for me in Young Munsters. It was a full-time role, and it was a great gig, actually, because you were literally touched on everything. Director of rugby, which were, I was head coach, were still playing actually a bit as well, so there was a bit of fun in it as well.
Right.
But it definitely gave me a good grounding, and I'll, as I said, I'll always be grateful to Young Munsters, because there wouldn't have been too many full-time roles at the time with club, true club rugby, I should say. And then I literally got my CV done up, and I contacted people. Any contacts I had from around the world, from coaches like Alan Gaffney or Jim Williams to people, fortunately, someone like Bernard Jackman was in Grenoble. And look, the question I suppose you're asking me, yeah, there is bigger barriers to overcome when you don't have a high profile, I suppose, playing career. But it was something that I was very driven. I wanted to get there, and I'll do what I have to do, and I'll go to where I have to go to get the opportunity. And again, thankful to Bernard Jackman that he opened that door in Grenoble, and kind of from a professional point of view, it kind of started from there.
So how many people do you think you might have reached out to then in this period? Like how many doors did you knock on?
Honestly, about, I'd say 30 or 40.
Oh, wow.
Minimum. Yeah, I would have, yeah.
So that's 30 or 40 people potentially saying, look, Mike, I'll keep an eye open, but there's nothing at the moment type calls.
Yeah, absolutely. And most people, you know, will come back to you through the contact or whatever it may be. And there's even players that I played with, that might have got coached by a coach that was still in the game. And yeah, I just literally I knocked on a lot of doors, and fortunately one of them opened through Bernard.
And did you lose faith? Like, because I heard you saying, I think it was with the Limerick Leader, you did an interview and you were saying, you know, even like someone like Ian McGeegan, you get to him through Owen Redden, and you know, this is the network, I guess, this is how it works. At any point did you think to yourself, God, this ain't happening? Or were you pretty confident something would happen?
I did, really, to be honest with you. I remember it was my last year with Munster, so I signed on with them for 4 years when I finished up with Munster. And I was kind of coming into the last year, and I had been, I suppose, doing it for maybe a couple of months previous to that and over the summer, and then we're into the last season. And I know from a financial point of view, even with Young Munsters, things were, I suppose, tighter naturally. It's a club game, and it's a full-time role I had, so it was very difficult for them to keep it going. And I was, I was starting to think, will this ever happen? But fortunately, as I said, Bernard contacted me.
And did you know him, or again, was that through teammates of yours, you know, Bernard, or how does that work?
I would have known Bert kind of not too well, I suppose. It was more through Paul and Quinny, really.
Right.
They would have obviously played with him and known him quite well. And I think it was Quinny that put me in contact with Bert, and he kept me updated. And fortunately, as I said, Grenoble were looking for a skills coach through Fabrice Landry, who was the director of rugby. He was looking for one, and he sounded Birch out. And originally, they wanted to do a 3 month trial run for the summer and see how it went. But I was moving lock, stock, and barrel over, family and everything. So we decided on a 1 year, and then fortunately that went okay. And you know what, Joe, it was a great place to go in, because I suppose I didn't have the language. I played maybe 4 or 5 years previous, so I had bits and pieces of French. But it was a very good role to start off. And as a skills coach, it let me go in. You know, I wasn't presenting videos. I wasn't under the pump as such, and it just allowed me forge relationships, and especially it allowed me to get my language and to learn the language, I should say. And that allowed me then in turn to build relationships with players, with the staff, because obviously you're in France, you need to speak French, and that was the first thing that I wanted to do.
You clearly made a huge impression over there. I say that because you were with Grenoble for 4 years, and then you went to Oyonnax, and there were two back-to-back relegations, which I'm sure is no fun, like long, miserable seasons at times if Grenoble are going down and then the next place you go to, they go down. So, I mean, the fact that not only are you not tarnished by that, but actually you go to Stade Francais and further enhance your reputation. And then I think Toulon were interested in you and Racing were interested in you. So clearly word had got around the game that this guy is really worth having around. If both Toulon and Racing are coming in for you, that must, I mean, give you an amazing sense of confidence. I'm sure you're kind of wondering how is word getting around, but clearly people talk in the game and they're saying good things about you.
Yeah, I suppose just to go back to Grenoble and Oyonnax, there were two years consecutively we were relegated, so that was tough. But there was a lot of learnings in that, good learnings that you take forward, because you need to see that side of it as well.
Yeah, the French press weren't putting it down as the Prendergast effect, were they?
I don't know. I hope not. No, I didn't see it anyway. Maybe they were. But and then Heineken Mayer contacted me when I was in Oyonnax, and I came to Stade Francais for a year, and Paul came over, Paul O'Connell, so we got working together, and it was a good year. We actually ended up, I know out there in the public domain, it kind of might have come out as positive, but we ended up, I think it was 8th, and we were 3 points off 6th from a team that had previous 2 years and then he got relegated. So we were on the right road. It was just, being honest with you, it was just our rugby philosophies were probably a small bit different. And then it's just, look, timing is a lot to do with it as well. Laurent Labitte, who is the French backs and attack coach, he left Racing at the last moment. And I was actually going, yeah, you're right, I was going to Toulon with Patrice Collazo, who was previously with La Rochelle. I played with him years ago in Gloucester. So rugby world is quite small that way. And he contacted me to see would I be interested in going down there. And I was literally on my way, and I got a phone call from Laurent Travers, the head coach in Racing, and kind of materialised like that, you know. And they made me an offer for 4 years, which was great as well, I have to say, because to get 4 years in professional sport is a massive bonus. But especially I had moved my family around France a bit as well. I have 3 young kids now, but I had 2 kids at the time. So it was a good bonus to get.
That must be tough. So the 3 kids, I think 3 daughters, I think from maybe a mid-teenager right the way down to almost relative newborn territory. I mean, it's something even Ron Nogara talks about, like the guilt of moving them from this school to that school. And, you know, you don't want to be doing that too much. I guess you have to have a few of those conversations around the family table.
Yeah, that isn't easy, but I have a daughter, she's 16, Emma, so she's been at a lot of different schools, we'll just say, so that's been challenging on her, but I think it's something that will make her stronger in the future. She's fluent in the language, and Roger would speak about it obviously as well, and he had a harder path in terms of travel. He went to New Zealand and back, so it isn't easy. We've understandable wives, and I suppose they see where we want to get and what we want to do, and they're backing you, and as I said, I've 2 younger girls as well, so a move for them. I've less than a year old, so she's only known Boulan in Paris, so and Freya, my other girl, is 5, so it hasn't been a huge adjustment for her as such, but or a huge change, I should say, for her. But for my 16-year-old, it was, and obviously for my wife as well. But look, we're here in Paris. We've been here for 3 years, and we're 2 years now in racing. So, and thoroughly enjoying it.
Good. I guess what a cool place to, well, one, be living, and then racing. I mean, discos on the pitch after matches is a long way from where you came through playing your rugby. You know, there's a bit.
A long way from Greenfield. Yeah.
It is. There's a bit of razzmatazz there off the field and on the field. We were just saying, when we were saying you were coming on the show earlier on, we were remarking on the fact that as a backs coach, you got a pretty cool group to work with there.
Yeah, it's an incredible club. The facilities, Jackie Lorenzetti, our owner, looks after us incredibly well, from our daytime facilities to where we play in the arena and razzmatazz that goes with it and whatnot. And then, as you said, look, we've quite a special back line that and we're after adding to it there recently with Gael Ficou coming over from Stade Francais. He came over there about 3 weeks ago. So yeah, himself and Jeremy Beckettau are have their partnership back together as well, obviously to play with each other with France. So
they were both Ficou in frightening form in the Six Nations as well.
And I coached him previously as well in Stade.
Of course, yeah.
Great player and a great fella as well. So, there's an impressive back line there. They're fun to work with.
And Mike, do you work on things like, you know, a lot of starter plays and set moves, or is it far more let's be free, just lads play up, and you're working more on skills, or you're trying to mix a bit of both? What kind of stamp are you trying to put in these guys?
Yeah, so I would do the attack and back coach. So I would work from first phase strikes to our basic attack framework. Everything we do from first phase through multi phase. I look after the ruck as well. Right. It was an area, I suppose, I upskilled myself through working with Paul O'Connell, who in turn had worked with and been coached under Joe.
Yeah.
It's a similar kind of system. So there's a framework there, as I call it, and I just ask the lads to go out and express themselves as best they can within that framework. And I encourage, you know, good decisions on a Monday when we look at the videos or during the week after training. And I think the players you give them a bit of freedom within it, but with the skill set and the players we have, I think your job is made a bit easier. But, they do want things tangible. So everyone has their roles within that framework. And especially around the ruck area, or if you're playing off 9, playing off 10, I'd look at first phase all the way through.
I've seen you asked elsewhere who's really impressed you, and it's interesting you've gone for Finn Russell a lot of the time, and unfairly or otherwise, Finn Russell would, in certain quarters, be talked about as somebody too liable to make a mistake, and then I don't know, is he misunderstood or what, Mike, but I mean, he might crack a smile afterwards and you're thinking, my God, if he does this on the Lions tour in South Africa, there'll be people blowing blood vessels next to him. So clearly there's a misunderstanding there, or a disconnect for a lot of us looking at Finn Russell from the outside.
Yeah, look, people have their own views and whatnot, but for us, he's a guy that turns up every weekend. I know at times people say he looks like a guy that's just after rocking up to the pitch on a Saturday or whatever, but there's a lot of homework he puts in, quietly as well, which I like. I have a good relationship with him. We'd sit down and have our coffee and our chats and how we're going to attack the game and with the other tens as well. But he's a guy that does a lot of, as I said, homework behind the scenes. He's not the type who's massively vocal within the video room or on the pitch, but it's just little bits of detail, one-worders, little lines or little, phrases that he gets across. And he's got the respect of the players because of that and because of, obviously, what he does on the pitch. Even on the weekend with a good win against Poe, and the guy can just do magical things. I know from the other flip side, people say, his control of the game. I think it's something that's improved an awful lot. Even talking to Gregor Townsend there, a couple of occasions we've spoken about that as well. And it's something he's definitely maturing as a player. And I think one thing he's added to his game from an attacking point of view, which was already very, very strong part of his game, is his offensive kicking game as well. We've scored a lot of tries through that with his ability to on those half-field kicks, just pinpoint kicks for your wingers, or as alluded to earlier, your back rows who are already out the edge. And it's a great asset to have, and he's got an incredible skill set. But as I said, he does look like, for some people, that some folk, that he's just turned up on the Saturday, he's rocked up, but the guy works hard up behind the scenes. Yeah.
You mentioned the ruck there. That's, a little extra element that you're doing. It does seem as if Joe Schmidt has almost gifted this great insider or expertise on the ruck to a whole array of Irish coaches now, and they're almost kind of best in class wherever they go. Is that kind of fair? Did Schmidt kind of give all you guys, I guess you three, O'Connell, kind of some serious tidbits or bits of knowledge there which kind of tend to go a long way?
Yeah, I reckon that's fair to say. As I said, I'd never worked with Joe anything but through Paul more so. I had a good chat with actually Joe during the summer about the rock, and we spoke about it. And yeah, it was more so, I suppose, look, it was through Paul that I upskilled myself, and he was very good at getting his message across.
And is it complicated, Mike? Could you explain it to your average coach in 10 minutes?
You know what, Joe? At the start, when I was looking at it, I thought it was, but once you go through it, quite as Paul says, do it short and sharp, not to have big long discussions about it. It's just little points that he get across.
Yeah.
Big folks obviously on the Paul carrier, and then your two first arrivers. But the thing I noticed about Paul, it was the same lingo day in, day out. He didn't change it. He was just really consistent about it. And anyone that wasn't doing the role, he'd pull him on it. But he did it in a very, amicable way as well, that they'd react, and they reacted really well to it, over here in Stade when we were there. Because something like that was very new to a lot of the French players especially. But they bought into it, and they saw how much or what worth it was to us, and it allowed us to hold on to the ball. And even from a wrestling point of view last year, our ruck became the quickest, fortunately, in winning collisions helps that as well, but our ruck was the fastest in Europe last year.
Right.
And also playing on that surface helped us as well, but it was something that, there's something tangible there on a Monday that you can go back to around the ruck area.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you can have Finn Russell, Jeremy Vakatawa, Simon Zeebo, etc., but you need that quick ruck ball. Mm. And look, it's not just all about the ruck. I know Roger's spoken about it, and we'll touch on it as well at times in terms of our offloading when it's the right time to do it or the right moment to do it. So it's not just all, you need that bit of a balance as well. But when we do speak about the ruck, that things are quite clear on it,
Yeah, God, it's kind of an amazing thought. All the Aussies or New Zealanders arriving into Irish rugby for a period now, you've got all these Irish coaches going around the world and spreading their little pearls of wisdom. It's kind of amazing how the cross-pollination of the game works. So, listen, it's been great chatting with you and getting a sense of the career. Seems like it's going really well. Ambitions long-term, are you going to come back and be a head coach of a province? Is that the aim? Secretly written down in a journal somewhere, or what's the thought?
Honestly, no. As a head coach, I don't think I've something that's not on the horizon at the moment for me. I love doing attack. I know you can be a head coach and an attack coach, but I think when you're a head coach, there's a lot that goes with it. Obviously, I love the hands-on tracksuit job, as they say. And at the moment, just really, really happy in wrestling, really happy in France, and enjoying it. So as of now, no, I'm happy out here, as they say.
Good man. Well, listen, all those 40-odd phone calls worked out in the end. Great to see you doing so well. Mike Prendergast, great to have you on. Thanks so much, Mike.
Cheers, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, continued success. So, Mike Prendergast there. Our rugby coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in. It is a nil-all between Burnley and Liverpool. 24 minutes on the clock in that game.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.